I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. In the 1960s, being a stewardess was an exotic and glamorous occupation. You were on the move and became an instant jet setter.
There are so many fabulous faraway places to see, such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri.
This Sunday, ABC will debut Pan Am, a new series based on the lives of a Pan Am crew in the 60s. Though it was a private company, Pan Am was the closest thing the U.S. ever had to a national carrier. Pan Am also undertook special diplomatic flights, putting its crew in contact with dignitaries like Gamal Abdel Nasser of Egypt and Marshal Tito of the former Yugoslavia. Nancy Holt Gannis is the executive producer of the new TV show. She brings her own experience to the table. From the late 60s to the mid-70s, Nancy was a Pan Am stewardess. They're now known as flight attendants, of course. Nancy, too bad for Pan Am that the series you helped create won't bring the now-defunct company any free publicity. How was Pan Am more than just another international carrier trying to sell as many plane tickets as possible?
Well, I think the founder, Pan Am, Juan Trip, had a vision of bringing the world together through travel. At one time, Pan Am was even larger than the United States Air Force. And he pioneered so many of the innovations that made commercial air travel possible.
The show presents a kind of sexy 60s stewardess. In reality, though, what did Pan Am, what did Juan Trip want the stewardesses to be?
I think he thought of us as sort of a quasi-diplomatic corps. He wanted the girl next door, and he wanted people that he could trust that would be resourceful and handle themselves appropriately in just about any situation.
And we see that in the show. There's a scene of the crew helping Cubans, I presumed failed rebels, escape during the Bay of Pigs. Was Pan Am imposed upon a lot by the U.S. government to do those types of humanitarian flights?
All the time. Pan Am didn't fly in the U.S. at all, but not only was Cuba the first place they flew to in 1927 when Juan Trip started the airline, they continued to fly to Cuba until the embargo because of the Cuban Missile Crisis. And so they were called upon to do humanitarian, to do secret airlifts, to do diplomatic missions all over the world. Sometimes as many as 50% of the flights would be special charters.
It was also a very international group, the crew. I mean, it must have been fascinating, the ground offices of Pan Am, say, in New York. What kind of languages were you hearing? It must have been like the UN.
It was. There were crew members, stewardesses, stewards, really from all over the world. And the Americans were in the minority because of the language requirements.
What were those language requirements?
You had to speak at least one foreign language, but you know, the more you spoke, the better it was, because it was a time when English wasn't the common language that it is today. And there were many people who traveled that would find themselves in jeopardy or not understand what they had to do through customs. And you really needed to be able to facilitate those transitions and put people at ease.
This is a perfect point to bring another former Pan Am stewardess into the conversation, Nancy. Karen Fiedler is actually German. Karen, you had an adventure or two when you were with Pan Am on flights with the ruling Indonesian family, the Sukarnos. You were on a flight with the Shah of Iran. And I have to ask you first, what did the Shah want to drink? Did you serve him?
Yes. That's a good question. I think predominantly wine, but not too much.
Right.
During the meal.
In a gold cup, perhaps?
More or less, yes. We had special dishes. We had everything special with the emblem on it. Everything was done, the menu from the bed sheets to the outside. Everything was arranged. Only the Shah only took half of the plane versus the colonel who chartered the entire airplane. And I met Khrushchev due to Sukarno on a state visit. We were flying in from Vienna into Moscow, and there were little microphones in our rooms. But interesting was the crew, the Pan Am crew, had to give the controls over to the Russian crew, had to do about the heights we were flying, and they didn't quite trust us. And at that time, it was the Pan Am pilots sitting behind the Russian pilots flying into Moscow at a certain heights where I could almost pick up flowers.
Wow. I mean, we're talking the Cold War here, you know, intense paranoia, especially between the Soviet Union and the United States. And in the first episode of the series, we're presented this notion that some stewardesses on Pan Am doubled as spies. Nancy, were you ever approached by any intelligence agency when you were flying with Pan Am?
I'm not going to answer that directly, okay. But I will say that it was logical if Pan Am was invited into countries or being chartered to go into countries that were really at odds with the U.S., certainly there is going to be infiltration. It just made sense, particularly when you're carrying people, say, Sukarno. And many of the base managers were CIA. There were crew members who were working for intelligence. And that was true all over the world. It just simply was the situation of the times. And it really was a perfect cover.
You know, for I think many of our listeners, it feels like Pan Am's final presence as an airline company ended with that image of the nose cone of that 747 on the ground in Lockerbie, Scotland, the fatal Flight 103 that was bombed allegedly by Muammar Gaddafi's government in Libya. For you and the other former employees of Pan Am, how do you reconcile the way the company darkly went off into the sunset with, you know, the otherwise illustrious history of Pan Am?
It was a tragedy in many ways because I think the airline really did provide a lifeline to people all over the world, brought people out of war zones, brought aid and supplies into places where people were in need. And to see it go down like that, but it wasn't immune to tragedy. It had been a target of terrorists for many years. In fact, the first 747 was hijacked on September 6th out of Amsterdam in 1970 and blown up on the runway in Cairo on September 11th that same year.
You remember those dates extremely well.
Yes. And there were other terrorist attacks when men with machine guns crossed the tarmac in jeeps and boarded the 707s at Rome's airport and threw hand grenades and fired their machine guns at passengers and crew members, killing many. And then again in Karachi, Pakistan, and, you know, a bomb went off in a Pan Am plane coming from Tokyo. So we were definitely not immune to that. It's just tragic that the U.S. government didn't help a company that had been so grand and had done so much for the U.S.
Yeah, certainly grim memories for the company. Let's end on a plus note. Karen Fiedler, how will you remember your time with Pan Am as a stewardess?
For me, it was absolutely magical in every way. I happened to be very lucky to get to these special flights, because not only did I meet Khrushchev, but then Nasser and Marshal Tito and his wife.
And when you look up at that Pan Am building at the bottom of Park Avenue in New York City, do you see the MetLife sign or do you see the Pan Am sign?
I see the Pan Am sign.
That's the right answer.
Always.
Former Pan Am stewardesses Karen Fiedler and Nancy Holt-Gannis. Ms. Holt-Gannis is also the executive producer of the new ABC series Pan Am, which debuts on the network this Sunday night. Nancy and Karen, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Marco.
Thank you, Malcolm.